This is Be the Story. There's a standard formula for romantic stories. It goes something like this. Boy meets girl, they fall in love, but they pretend they don't even notice each other. And then finally, they declare their love and live happily ever after. This brief summary of the standard formula may seem a bit corny. Indeed, most romantic stories are much deeper than that. There are hundreds of variations, but still, most romantic stories follow this basic pattern. And there's a reason why the standard formula is used so much. Because it works. This week on Be the Story, feeling the romance and keeping it real. A look at how the movie The Baxter uses the standard formula with a great end result. Also, what makes a romantic story? What is romance, in fact? And I'll create a sample romantic storyline, and you all can, in fact, pick over it if you'd like. That's all coming right up on Be the Story. Hi, this is Tim King, and you're listening to Be the Story, the podcast celebrating stories and those who tell them. This week, I've been watching a lot of romantic movies because it's Valentine's Day week, and I want to get to romance or romantic storylines anyhow. But first, let me just quickly go down the feed, all the articles and comments and so forth posted at BeTheStory.com. We start Tuesday with the uselessness of genres. One of the things that really irks me, one of my pet peeves, is when writers especially take stories and try to pigeonhole them into genres. Genres are really just marketing instruments. It's just an easy shorthand way for us to get a good feeling about what a particular story is going to be about or what elements a story is going to have. And that's it. Just because a story goes into one genre does not mean it has no elements from other genres. And some stories fit in multiple categories just as easily as they'll fit in one or the other. What actually motivated me to write on this topic was a comment that T. Morris made almost offhandedly on his podcast, The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. So I'm already getting started on this. I'm going to do another rant unless I go on. On Wednesday, the forces of character change. Extraordinary changes require extraordinary forces. So the bigger the change that happens in a story, the larger the force that you need to invoke in order to make that change. This should be obvious. I mean, with a physical change, with an external change, we realize that a huge force is necessary to make a huge physical change. The same is true of character changes. Then moving ahead to Thursday, Thursday's spotlight was a book called Heartbeat by Sharon Creech. This is a short book. I don't really want to call it a novel, targeted at girls aged 9 through 12. My daughter actually put me onto it. Her teacher had put her onto it. It's only about like 10,000 words, but what a great 10,000 words. And it's a great story for a parent and daughter to bond over as well. So if you have a daughter aged 9 through 12, you'll definitely want to consider Heartbeat as one of the books in your reading list. On Friday, where to get character ideas, or at least one source. You look at people who are completely unlike you. For me, it's people like the ones on Stunt Junkies, which is a new show on the Discovery Channel. I've been watching it not because I want to be a stunt junkie and not particularly because the stunts fascinate me, because they don't. What fascinates me are the people doing these stunts. What motivates them? It's just a completely different world for me. Then, how to measure a good story. This is actually an article about story ratings and the fact that some people are going to love a good story and some people are going to hate it. But it's better to be loved and hated than for everyone to think your story is just mediocre. And lastly, something that not many of us complain about, but some people do complain about it, how to handle too many ideas. Actually, most of us probably encounter this problem, even if we don't realize it. For some of us, having too many ideas means having all these ideas all pressing for attention. And it's better to keep a journal, get these ideas out on paper, because then you can clear your head. Most of us have all these ideas going through our heads, but we kind of block them out and go to other things and lose a lot of the ideas. And keeping a journal can solve that problem too. So that's all at BeTheStory.com this past week. In comments, Mer Lafferty from I Should Be Writing replied to my article on info dumps. And this actually was a reply to an article on the Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas site regarding Neal Stephenson's book Snow Crash, which I have not read. Mer writes as follows. Woot, I'm not alone. I've always felt like the only person who could see a glaring, boring flaw with Snow Crash. Sure, the samurai bits were cool, and YT was awesome, and even the long bits of detail on her mom's workplace politics were amusing. But if the librarian had suffered system failure after the first page of exposition, I would have enjoyed the book a lot more. And now I'm feeling like I definitely have to read Snow Crash, because I have absolutely no idea what she's talking about. But I certainly do know about novels that have lots of exposition. The one I'm trying to read through right now is of that nature, and it's just making it really difficult to get through it, because it is a great story, but there are these big sections of long descriptions of stuff that, well, I really just don't care about. I'm not saying right now what the novel is, but I'll post about it after I've finished reading it. I'll post about it on BeTheStory.com on the blog. Also, an anonymous commenter, someone's actually disagreeing with me. And this is great, actually, because stories, when you're talking about how stories affect you, sometimes it's a very personal experience. Sometimes it's very subjective. And we kind of have to live with this. But my quick little article that I did on Nora Roberts' novella, Spellbound, one of the things that really irked me was that she kept switching point of view between we're in his head and then we're in her head and then we're in his head again. And that kind of thing really gets on my nerves, mostly because it tends to confuse me. I'm trying to read along. I'm trying to live the story and keep track of the point of view, and there are these shot changes, as if there was a camera that suddenly was looking at a new area or from a new perspective, and yet the shot change was not anticipated. I had no reason to believe that there was going to be a shot change. It kind of just took me by surprise. If you look at movies or at TV, or if you know anything about cinematography, you can notice that when you change the point of view, there's some anticipation, some reason for it. And especially when you're changing from one person's point of view to another person's point of view, there is some anticipation of it. Just the next time you're watching TV, look for these things. It'll just blow your mind. Anyway, I didn't feel that Nora Roberts in Spellbound did that. she didn't use any of the things that I might have expected when she changed the perspective from one person's thoughts to another person's thoughts. And so I got really confused. And this anonymous poster apparently wasn't confused by it. He didn't see it as a change, or she, I don't know, but as a thought conversation where we're seeing the words and thoughts from one person and then from the other person. And yeah, I guess some people might take it that way. It still confused me. I don't know what I would do if I were a telepath. All right, now that I've gone on far longer than I ought to have, let's get right on to romantic stories for Valentine's Day week. Let's talk about what makes a great romantic story right after this on Be the Story.
I'm bored.
I'm bored too.
Hey kids, look what I've got for you.
Kick-Ass Mystic Ninja Bits!
Yes, you asked for it, and here they are. Kick-Ass Mystic Ninja Bits are chock full of information, reviews, and links to exciting sci-fi sites with buttery goodness. So hurry up and go to www.kickassmysticninjas.com for your own tasty ninja bits today.
And they're educational too. Wow!
Roswell, UFOs, Atlantis, time travel, Hollow Earth, Dwarf, underground bases, reincarnation, levitation, prehistory, giants, abductions, and the Pigman. The Pigman? What on earth is the Pigman? To find out more on the Pigman and all the latest news from the other side, join me, Ben Grundy, for Mysterious Universe. Visit www.sohpodcast.com or search for Mysterious Universe in your favorite podcast directory.
If you don't mind me asking, what's the dictionary for?
You won't believe this, but it's actually what I'm reading at the moment. I know it.
Wait! Before you say anything else, I need you to know that I am also reading the dictionary.
Really?
Yes! What letter are you up to?
Right now I'm working my way through G.
Oh, G! G is a classic!
You know, I particularly liked the word Gromwell. Type of plant bearing yellowish flowers and white stony nutlets.
I love that word.
And welcome back to Be the Story. That was one of the early scenes from the movie The Baxter between the characters Elliot Wendell Sherman, played by Michael Showalter, and Cecil Mills, played by Michelle Williams. This movie is a great example of the standard romantic formula. Elliot Wendell Sherman is a Baxter. In other words, a man who will never get married because women always leave him for their one true love. And this pattern repeats itself with one Carolyn Swan, played by Elizabeth Banks, who leaves him at the altar. Now, this is not a spoiler. We find out that this relationship ends this way at the very beginning of the movie. But this story is not about that romance. It's about the romance between Elliot and Cecil. And we can see from the very beginning of the movie that there is a strong amount of romantic potential. If you watch this movie, note that we have a lack of sympathy for Carolyn. We don't really sympathize with her because we know ahead of time that she's going to leave Elliot at the altar and break his heart. And also note that during the time that they're developing their relationship, we, the audience, don't really get to see the details of that relationship. It's just kind of glossed over. On the other hand, whenever Elliot and Cecil are in a scene, we get to see every last little move every last facial expression, every inflection of the voice to indicate how much they're feeling for each other. Of course, just because they feel something doesn't mean that they need to act on those feelings. And indeed, Elliot is engaged to Carolyn, and Cecil has a boyfriend. Standard stuff, really. But it does mean that they can't pursue a romance, which is prime fodder for an effective romantic conflict. Indeed, it is an effective romantic conflict. The Baxter made a number of debatable story choices. You can read about them and the reviews, user reviews at Amazon.com or IMDb. Now, because of these story choices, you may or may not love the movie. You may find it mediocre. A lot of people did. But for all of these debatable choices, it is an effective romance. I myself definitely found it fun to watch, and I would watch it again. I think the humor even is starting to grow on me. But what makes a romance effective or ineffective in a story, that is? What is it about romantic stories that inspire romantic feelings in the audience? Now, note, just a side note, I am talking about romantic stories. I'm using the term romantic stories as opposed to romance, because I mean stories that have romantic qualities, not just stories in the romance genre in the bookstore, or just comedy romances or dramatic romances at the DVD case. Rather, any romantic story thread. Now, the first thing you'll notice is that a romantic storyline builds up sympathy for the characters. This is pretty important because, now, while a romantic story can have plot twists and, in fact, can be heavily plotted, still, romance itself is about people. And so romantic story threads are character-based. So, for example, one of the characters, frequently in a romantic story, one of the characters has to overcome some personal obstacle that's keeping him from pursuing the romance and resolving the romantic conflict. So one thing that is characteristic of an effective romantic story is that it builds up sympathy for the characters. It makes them feel for each other, and it makes us, the audience, feel deep inside ourselves the same longings that the characters are displaying for each other. To do this, you have to show us what the characters are feeling. Don't tell us. In fact, generally, the characters should not say, "I love you." They should be demonstrating. In fact, it's best if they can't say, "I love you," because that is usually indicative of some sort of an internal conflict that's keeping the romance from blossoming. Once we in the audience feel the longing, you can draw out this separation between the characters. Make sure that they can't get together. Make it less and less likely as the story goes on. Make it less and less likely that they'll be able to fulfill these longings. Finally, at the very end, allow them to come together, and we in the audience at that point can turn on the waterworks. So there is a standard formula for romantic stories. And the reason why it works is it allows us to feel the same romantic longings that the characters feel, and then denies us those longings. This is the basis of a great story arc. You set up some conflict and then don't allow it to be resolved until the very end. Instead, you build the conflict. In an action flick, for example, you would have a super villain that causes the audience to cry out for blood, and then you refuse to give it to them until the very end, if even then. You have to keep the villain alive because he is the main source of the conflict that drives the story forward. And you have to let him get worse and worse as the story progresses. Because otherwise, the story would be over. Or else it would stagnate. In the same way, in a romantic story, you set up some sort of a romantic conflict. And then build it and build it until the very end. Bang. Our hearts all turn to jello. Let's talk about romance as a basic human need. Now, Abraham Maslow, he developed a hierarchy of needs. And he proposed it in his 1943 paper, A Theory of Human Motivation. So his theory basically says that humans have basic needs, and after these very basic needs are satisfied, there are successive layers of higher needs in a hierarchy. And this is usually displayed as a pyramid. So at the bottom of the pyramid are physiological needs. Things like the need to breathe, the need to eat, the need to sleep. After we have our physiological needs met, we turn to meeting our need for safety. These are needs like the need to be free from violence or to be well provided for, to be in good health. Now, Maslow put sex in the very first category, physiological need, the need to procreate. And I can see where he's coming from, but some of the best romantic stories have no sex in them whatsoever. Actually, over the past week, I've watched three really great romantic movies. None of them had any sex between the two main romantic characters. Romance, for our purposes, is about intimacy, not sex. And intimacy goes into the third layer in Maslow's pyramid. It's the layer that covers the need to be loved or the need to belong, the need to have friends, to have a family, the need to be accepted and to accept others, the need to be needed. These are all the things that we look at for romantic conflict. Deny one of the characters one of these needs, and you have a great romantic conflict in the making. So after we come back from this break, I'm going to try to apply these to a sample romantic storyline, just off the top of my head. So stay tuned.
Hi, this is Ron from Griddle Cakes Radio. Are you looking for a family, work-safe podcast that'll make you smile? If so, swing by griddlecakes.com. Once there, you'll hear things such as a musician's trade organization threatening to sue Thomas Edison over his phonograph record machine.
They've made their living this way their entire careers, and you, Mr. Edison, you have taken this living away.
Yeah. I'm sorry you feel that way.
Well, we can't sit back and allow this piracy to go on any longer. Here.
What's this?
It's a cease and desist letter. You are to stop manufacturing phonograph record machines immediately.
You're kidding, right? Am I on candid camera?
Or, did you ever wonder what animals actually do at night?
Wait. No. Cut. 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 Stop. What are you doing? You sound like a bunch of animals.
But we are animals.
But don't you see? We don't have to be. We can be much better than animals. We can be
Musicians!
Griddle Cakes Radio, exploring the lost art of audio storytelling. Check us out at www.griddlecakes.com.
Welcome back to Be the Story. We're going to try to create a simple romantic storyline right off the top of my head. I'm going to try to do this, and this truly is right off the top of my head. I don't have any notes in front of me. But I'm going to try to create a simple romantic storyline based around the standard formula using a romantic conflict. That is a need to love and to be loved, specifically between a man and a woman. So first we have to define the conflict represented by this need. The character, he has a need to love a woman and to be loved in return. But let's see, perhaps he's not available emotionally. Or maybe he tries to create a relationship with this woman, but tries to keep it platonic because that's what he's comfortable with. Maybe he is motivated to avoid the pain of rejection. And maybe we can make him suffer rejection before he gets to acceptance. How did this happen? How did he get into this pattern of establishing platonic relationships with women? Well, maybe when he was young, he grew up with sisters and they had a lot of girlfriends, and maybe he was just around a lot of girls during the formative years, as we say, and maybe his first love was a really bad experience. He started to develop feelings and maybe he was rejected, and so this set up a pattern of platonic relationship good, romantic relationship bad. So far we have this character. He meets a woman who has some romantic feelings for him. He wants to keep it completely platonic. And perhaps she then develops more and more feelings, tries to start a romantic relationship with him. He ends up rebuffing her, and she decides that she just can't have this relationship. So the relationship reaches a crisis state. All right, so we've gotten our character into the fix. How do we get him out? He can't just suddenly decide, you know, he's going to try something new. He's going to try the romantic relationship. He needs some impetus for that, because his whole characterization is based upon the fact that he does not trust romantic relationships. One thing we could do is we could bring his sister into the picture, show the deep relationship he has with his sister, and have something awful happen to her, something involving a hospital. Great way, believe it or not, to induce tremendous character change. Maybe he then decides that he wants this woman, whom he has learned to love in a platonic way, but still very deeply emotional, and he wants to share this part of his life with her. He wants her there with him. So maybe he calls her, at least starts to take steps to get her back. We would have to flesh out this idea much, much more before it became an actual story. But I trust you can start to see how the elements of the story are starting to come together, and how there are even more opportunities to make this a great story. Actually, when I said that I had no notes to rattle these ideas off the top of my head, That's not completely true. I actually did have Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic opened in a window on my computer. Just one page of it. It's like 147 pages in all. But next week, I'm going to be looking at great characters and how to make them. Characterization is one of the things that tends to mystify us. It's like some sort of a black art. Well, I've read lots of great resources on how to create characters, but as a practical step-by-step guide, the one I like best is Holly Lyle's Create a Character Clinic. And so next week, I'm going to briefly go over the 7 areas of character development that she goes into in her Create a Character Clinic. I'll also briefly review the other parts of the Create a Character Clinic. And I'll create a sample characterization so you can see exactly how this works. That's next week on Be the Story. I'll see you then.